Good morning. My name is Cindy Scott, a very grateful member of Al-Anon. Oh, that's quite an introduction. I hate to say I've been told that before, that I'm just a drink away from the AA program. I want to thank you all for having my husband and I both here this weekend. This is, you know, I love Texas. I've always felt that Texas had the warmest people I'd ever met. And I have to tell you, since I came into town yesterday, I have met some of the most warmest, loveliest people. It is just fantastic. And, you know, my sponsor tells me that throughout a weekend or a conference, it's a lot of times there's a word that's a special word just for you. And what will happen is you'll hear that over and over and over again. It'll just kind of come to you through different sayings and different people. My word I already have, and that is fellowship. This is the warmest, the most loving place that I have ever been, and I'm so grateful to be in your arms today. I come from Billings, Montana, where there's a group back there called the Billings Recovery Group, and they send their greetings. They they love Al-Anon and they love AA. And when I came here and was amongst you last night, we had a great barbecue, even though it's a little chilly out there, but we had a man who was very committed who was baking, cooking burgers last night, Pat, and Pat and Claire had us over at their home, and it was lovely, and I got to meet some old friends and some new friends, and you know, it's just AA and Al-Anon, that's what it is. And then when Dixie talked about this morning, family recovery, I was looking on your program, and you have just as many Al-Anon speakers as you do AA speakers, and that is fantastic, because you see, that's the way that I was raised in this fellowship. There wasn't the AAs over there and the Al-Anons over here. However, we had our separate meetings, but our fellowship was one. And I'm real grateful for that family recovery because I have children today. And because of that family recovery, some of those children are in recovery. And I do believe that it's because of us making this one recovering family as a whole. My story is, you know, I listen to so many people share, and I think, oh, man, that's something. You know, I guess, you know, I just always think, well, I really don't have a story. I mean, I'm just one of those people that found themselves an alcoholic and tried to straighten him up. It didn't work, and he got sober, and I came into Al-Anon. But I forget, you see, because when I met that alcoholic, I was only 12 years old. And, you know, I guess they say that to us, our stuff seems normal, and it seemed normal to me to be 12 years old and out there looking for a husband already. I don't know if my stepdad was an alcoholic or not, but the background or the environment that I was raised in, my stepdad drank a lot, and when he drank, he was very, very violent. My mom was a typical pre-Al-Anon. You know, she was always trying to keep us kids out of the way, keep everything quiet, don't disturb him because, you know, if you disturb him, then he's going to drink. And, you know, looking back, I know that was pre-Al-Anonism. And, you know, it was just normal for us. And so I remembered, you know, growing up in a home in which there was always anxiety. There was always, you never know what was going to happen next. You never know when this man was going to lose his temper. And like I said, he got very, very violent. He beat my mother. It was just, you know, it was alcoholism. And, you know, today it's just amazing to me that because of this fellowship there's been healing. Because of this fellowship, you know, I understand. And I was able to forgive this man. And even today, he's an old, old man. And, you know, he's all alone because everyone has left him. His children, all of his wives, all nine of them, however many he had. I don't know. Maybe he had fun when it was happening, but he's alone now. And, you know, he still doesn't even understand what has happened to him. He doesn't even know that, you know, that there's a better way to live. And I feel sad for him because he's very, very lonely. But that's how I got to Billings, Montana. My mom took me and three other children and left him when I was eight. And moved up to Billings, and I was, like I said, eight, and I became the mother and took care of the children while she worked at night. She was 21 years old with four kids, and so she had no education, so she did what she could for odd jobs, and that was working in the bars at night, and I just, like I said, took care of the kids. So I guess I grew up real quick, and I began, like I said, at 12, thinking, well, you know, I need a husband. I need my own children. I need my own stuff. And so that's what I did. And I snuck out of the house and went to a dance one night. And first dance I'd ever been to. Oh, I was so excited. You know, it was the music. And it's just like it is when you go into the bar. There's that excitement. You know something's going to happen. And there's just tension in the air. And there's boys there, and there's, you know, it's just really exciting. And there was this guy in the band, and he had the deepest, bluest eyes. And now there's nothing abnormal about me. I worked my way up front, and I stood there, and I stared at this young man for 3 hours. Now, I never moved. And he was he was playing his guitar, and, you know, I mean, very solemn face. Finally, they would take these little 15-minute breaks, and during that time, we'd sneak around the back, me and a couple girls, and, of course, they were back there drinking, doing what they do, and we'd giggle and laugh, and then we'd run back around, and they'd come back out. And so finally, on the last set, his mouth turned up just a little bit into a smile. That was it. I mean, that was it. That was my man. And I have to tell you that, you know, this year we'll celebrate 29 years of marriage. Now, thank you. Thank you. And I say that from my heart because, you see, without you, that would never be possible. Because when we came to you hating one another. I can't even tell you that, because you've been there, you know, you've taken the trip and you know what it's like. You go through the marriage and you try everything to keep them sober. You try loving them into sobriety. You hate them into sobriety. You try everything there is. And, you know, I finally got to a point of total indifference. I didn't want anything to do with him, but I had these two kids. And I knew that I could not support these two kids accustomed to the style that we had been living. And so I just felt like there was no way out. I didn't realize that there was any hope at all in the situation, because I did not know it was alcoholism. None of the members of my family had any idea that we had been people who along the generations had been affected by alcoholism. And I was talking to Stephanie last night, and both of us were saying that, you know, we were the first as far as being able to make a turning point in our families towards recovery from alcoholism. And that's really exciting to think that God loves us enough that at some point he reaches down and he realizes that we cannot help ourselves. And so he begins to put into motion a plan. And that's exactly what he did in our lives. He got us to the place where, you know, we were sick and tired of each other and we'd done everything we could. And I guess that's the point of surrender that our program talks about. You know, we have such a wonderful program here, and it's so powerful, but there is a requirement, and that requirement is absolute and total surrender. Well, we had reached that point, because through the years, we had he tried to kill me, and I tried to kill him. What mine was, it's very simple. We would go into town. We lived about 30 miles out of town on a ranch, and, you know, he loved to party, and so he went almost every night there towards the end. And I'd even gotten to the point where I found a solution, you know, for making sure I could keep tabs on him, and that is you just hire a live-in sitter. And if you have a live-in sitter, when the alcoholic says, let's go, boom, you're ready. And that's the way it had to be in my home. And so, you know, I had this little gal who was very young, and she lived downstairs. She had a room of her own, and then she would be the housekeeper and the sitter, which was kind of funny because most of you Al-Anons know that we don't need housekeepers. They never do it right anyway. So even today, I have a lady who comes in, and before she comes, you know, I go around and do the cleaning. Some things just don't die. So I was ready to go, and we did this. And, you know, many, many nights, I would drive him back home. This was the deal. He would crawl into the back seat, and he'd pass out, and then I would, you know, continue and get him home safely. And one night, I just thought, this is ridiculous. And so this is what I did. It was Montana, and it was that particular night, I think it was about 30 below. And we did not have any heat in our garage. And so I pulled into the garage, and very quietly, I put my hand over the light. I opened the car door, and, you know, there's a button there that you can push to keep that light from coming on. So I did that. And then, you know, this is all a process, very thought out. And then I very quietly closed the door, slipped into the house, crawled into the warm bed, and knew that when I get up in the morning, my problems were going to be all over with. But you know how it is, those alcoholics. I tell you, I don't know what it is. He woke up somehow and found his way back into the house. And this happened more than once. So my plans failed. But, you know, then there was the time that he, every Sunday morning it was like this. I hated Sunday mornings. Those of you who had alcoholism in your home, don't you hate Sunday mornings? They're just the most dreadful. There's nothing, at least back then, there was no satellite, and there was nothing on TV but church, and that's the last thing you want to hear. And, you know, I had these two small children, and they were always up bright and early, and so I had to get up with them, and even though I'd been up half the night with him, and so I would take these little small children, and I'd say, now I want you to know that, right, and you're going to know it anyway, so I'm just going to tell you right up front, I am not one of those Al-Anons that was very kind and loving and self-sacrificing. I was one who, instead of trying to keep the dinner warm, I turned it up and hoped it'd be burnt to a crisp by the time I got home, just for being late. You know, I mean, I was very, very vindictive. And it was no picnic being married to me. They used to tell him, well, if you had a wife like mine, you'd drink too. And, you know, and I always kind of cringed when they said that, because I thought there's probably some truth to that one. But anyway, I would send these little kids in, and I'd say, Daddy's in bed. Why don't you go see Daddy? Of course, they, you know, little toddlers, they go running there screaming. You know how they get that high-pitched scream, and they jump on the bed, and you could just see him. I mean, he was just, oh. And I loved it. You know, I would do anything I could to create misery for him, because I just was so angry inside. And I wasn't one, like I said, to bury it deep inside. I let it out. And one morning I was out there, it was Sunday morning, and he was in there sleeping it off again, and I had this broom I'd taken out with me. There was these mud swallows, I think they're called, and they build these nests around your windows. They're just a mess. And I was out there, and I'd beaten that window with this broom, you know, just as loud as I could. And next thing you know, I'm into this, and I look up, and there he's standing there, his hair all disheveled, and he's got this gun in his hand. And I looked at him straight in the eye, and I put my hands on my hips, and I said, well, are you going to shoot or what? So what does he do? I mean, you know, this is the insanity of the Al-Anon. I'm taking my life in my own hands. I don't even know it. The poor guy, he just holds the gun, he just pulls it up the last second and shoots it off. And I just turned around and walked into the house. You know, and so this is where we were at. You know, I'm just trying to give you an idea how much we loved each other. Well, fortunately, one day, he called me up, and I was at home. By that time, I quit going with him. You know, I mean, after a while, I just didn't even want to be with him anymore. And fact is, I did some things that I'm not too proud of, and that, you know, I had to make some amends for, and that is that I begin to, you go to the bars all the time, and there's always willing participants, and, you know, he was always off drinking and playing cards, and I got to looking around, and I found me a hymn that I thought might be kind of fun, and anyway, I really hurt some people, at that time I just thought I went out of this deal, and I couldn't do it on my own, and I guess I was hoping he would kick me out, and he tried. You know, we did the deal where he asked me to leave, and I don't think he asked me to leave. He took me and my bags and dropped me off at my mother's. That's what happened. But the interesting thing is he couldn't stay away, and he kept coming back in every day begging me to come back home. So then I'd go back home, and then the next thing you know, I would leave. And, you know, so we moved in and out of my mother's house. In fact, years later, there was a neighbor across the street when we came into A&M Al-Anon who said, hey, I know you guys. I've seen you guys, he's about once a month. And I always knew. He said, I always knew if she was moving in, it was her suitcases. And it was her glad bags. Everything was dumped in the glad bags, and that's because that's the way he moved me. But when I was moving out, it was packed nicely in suitcases. And so obviously they had been watching with a lot of interest. And, you know, we are quite entertaining, and thank goodness when we get here, we can learn to laugh at ourselves. And you've given me that gift. You've given me the gift of being able to laugh at some of the greatest pain. Before I came here, the night before I came, I was going to go home because I still hadn't packed, and, you know, we just had a birthday meeting, and it was a great meeting. We had birthday night, and I had given a couple of gals that I sponsor a cake, and, you know, it just felt good. And so I was going to go home. Usually I go to coffee, and I was going to go home and pack, and one of my girls said, are you going to coffee? And I said, well, no, not tonight. I think I'm going to go get my packing done. And she says, well, I have this newcomer, and you really need to talk to her. Well, I cannot pass up talking with a newcomer. I love newcomers. Newcomers give me life. And I, of course, immediately dropped all my plans. I said, I'll be there. And so I went, and it was so neat. I was sitting there talking to her. She had a short sleeve dress on, which I find kind of interesting because this time of year, it's just not short sleeve weather. But she had bruises all up and down her arms, and I don't know if she was trying to show them off or what, but they were there. And her problem was her husband had beat her again. And as I was talking to her, I had such compassion for her because, you know, she doesn't know that there's another way. She doesn't have any idea that she does not have to live that way. She doesn't have any idea that she doesn't even, it's all right to love her alcoholic, that there's nothing wrong with loving her alcoholic. But she doesn't know how to do that, and she just vacillates between just anger and wanting to kill him, and then that feeling of, but I can't leave him. I asked her, I said, how long have you been married? She says, 23 years. And I looked at that, and I thought, you know, God can make miracles happen here. And I just, as I talked with her, I hoped that she could see the hope that we offer, you know, because so many people come into our program, into our fellowship here, and they leave again. And they never recognize the power that's here. And that's why I think it's so important for us to share. It's so important for us to show up. You know, Arbutus is someone who is one of my heroes. And she's been in this fellowship a long, long time. And she's still going to meetings. And she's still showing up for those new people. And, you know, she's still reaching out and still trying to help. And that's what I want to be like when I grow up. I've got heroes in this fellowship. My sponsor is one of those heroes. She took her 30-year birthday cake last night, 30 years in Al-Anon. And she's still going to meetings, too, just like Arbutus. She's still carrying this message because, you see, this program changed her life so drastically that she cannot help but to share it. And that's why I'm here before you today, because even though it seemed normal to me at the time, it's not. And how I remember that it's not normal is when I talk to those new people, and I remember that that's the way that I was living. It's real easy to get comfortable. This program works so good, so quick, that it's real easy to forget how bad we need it. It's easy to forget that the way we get to keep it is by giving it away. And this fellowship has saved my life. It has put life back into a family that had none before we got here. And this newcomer was a gift to me before I got here. She was just a gift. It just filled me up because it just helped me to remember what we're all about. And I need those reminders because sometimes I get a little tired too. And I'm glad that God gives us those little gifts when we need them. But anyway, my husband called me this one night, and he said, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I got drunk again, but this time it's going to be different. This time I'm going to go to an AA meeting." Well, let me tell you, I was not a very loving wife at that time. I did not say, "Oh, how wonderful, honey. I'm so glad for you." Instead, I said, "Well, big deal," and hung up the phone. And so for a couple weeks then, after that call, I never seen much of him. And it didn't mean much, because I'd never seen much of him anyway. He was always gone till after the bars closed. I didn't know that he was spending all this time in AA. I didn't know that he had some alcoholics who were sitting down with him every night, keeping him relayed so that he was so busy that he couldn't get to the bar, and then 2 o'clock they let him go home. I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. That, they welcomed me when no one else did. My husband, towards the end there, would come over, you know, his friends would come to the house, and they would knock on the door. And I was so gracious that as soon as I seen it was one of them, I opened the door, I turned around, and I walked away. I never even greeted them. You know, when I think that I didn't have any insanity in my life, all I have to look at is the way I was acting. I hated people. I isolated. I just, I had all the isms that it talked about in Al-Anon. And I'm grateful for an Al-Anon group that talked about our isms and didn't talk about the alcoholic. This Al-Anon group talked about what we were doing as a result of being affected by alcoholism, our insanity, some of the things that just was not normal. And I began to identify with those things. But, when I came to the fellowship in the beginning, I did not embrace Al-Anon, I have to tell you. I didn't like you in Al-Anon. I thought you were a wimp. I thought if you were just a little stronger and not so spineless, you see. That's why it took Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, they're not like Al-Anon. Sometimes can be a little, you know, we want to be real careful. We don't hurt people's feelings, and we sort of soften the truth about our character defects, and it's just we kind of ease people into it. But in AA, they didn't do that, and they were just beating those alcoholics in meetings, and I was loving it. You know, it's like yes, yes. And my husband had this sponsor, and I tell you what, he was just I love that man. I truly love that man because he kept him in line, and he told him all those things that I told him earlier, but he didn't listen to me. But he listened to that sponsor of his, and you know, and that sponsor made him go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And now I have to tell you, after about 30 days, I started doing this. Well, what about church? If you know, I mean, that's part of being a good husband, a good father. God wants you to be in that pew on Sunday morning. And I had done the church deal, and so I'd gotten very religious before I came into the program, and I was using, I look back at that and I can see that it was just another tool for me to escape being me. And I was able to use this religion as a tool to beat other people up with. And, I did this with my husband. I made him feel like he really wasn't spiritual if he wasn't attending church. And, you know, and thank goodness he had a good sponsor who understood the illness of the other side. And his sponsor told him, he said, "Your wife is very, very sick from having lived with you, but don't tell her that." And of course, you all know what he did. He couldn't wait to get home. Well, there began to be a few flaws in the sponsor of his. He didn't quite know everything. But nonetheless, I put up with him for a while. And, again, because of this program, I got the experience of being able to stand by that man's hospital bed. He died of cancer, and because of you, I had the courage to go up there and to say to him what was in my heart, and that was that I was so grateful for what he had done for my husband, and that it had affected our family in a way that no one else could have. And of course, like a true altruistic alcoholic, he said, "Ah, it was nothing." He says, "I got more out of it than he did." And, you know, I was so grateful. He died shortly, within a few hours after that. And, to be able to have expressed that gratitude. Because, you see, I'm one who never tells anybody thank you. I never told anybody I'm sorry. There are words that were not a part of my vocabulary. And you have changed that for me. You have been examples for me of showing me a different way to live. A way that has given me some degree of peace and serenity in my life, regardless of what life is happening, what's going on around me. I didn't know that could be. I thought you had to get everything in order to be okay, and I was having a real hard time juggling life. And the early days in the program were basically me going to AA meetings, open meetings, and just listening to the alcoholic. And one day I remember they were having a meeting on the third step, and I heard my husband saying to another alcoholic, "You know, this is really a difficult step for me." And I said, "Yes, it is. It's a very difficult step for him." Now, all of a sudden became a very supportive wife, and I'm going to help him work the steps. But I have to tell you, I was in the program, and this is terrible, but where I come from, there was no sponsorship in Al-Anon. In fact, as I was sharing with someone last night, that after seeing the changes in my husband, it was such an attraction that I decided I wanted what he had. And I begin, the greatest thing about that is I began to love and to respect him again. And I went to someone in an Al-Anon meeting that I had been attending, and she seemed to be the one who was always chairing the meetings and, the one in charge. And so I went to her and I said, "Would you be my sponsor?" And she said, "Oh, no, I don't sponsor people because, you see, that's a control issue, and I'm working real hard not to be in control of other people's lives." And, today I understand that she just didn't have, nobody had shared with her. Nobody had told her about the program of recovery, the 12 steps. You know, sponsorship is not about controlling people's lives. Sponsorship is about sharing with others what you have been given. And I felt like, well, I guess that's that. And, God is so wonderful. He knows exactly what we need, and he has a plan. He has a plan for all of us. And I mumbled around in Al-Anon for 5 years, just kind of trying to do it myself, and it's really sad because I sounded like an Al-Anon, I looked like an Al-Anon, I talked, you know, I mean, I knew the language, I knew everything about it, but it was like there was something, there was this thing, this image on the outside, that it didn't match with the inside. I felt like I was not one with myself, and, you know, that was another point of surrender for me. I got to a place where I couldn't stand it anymore. And I was talking to an AA woman, and I was telling her, I said, you know, I've never done a four-step, and I don't know what to do about this because there's no one in Al-Anon that does this. And I love alcoholics. They are so generous. They are so loving. And that's one of the things I got to tell this newcomer Thursday night. I said, you know, alcoholics are unique people in the way that they have a capacity for love like none other. And maybe that's why I have always been drawn to alcoholics, because there's something about them that I don't even have the capacity to love like my husband does. And, you know, there are times that I'm overwhelmed by that capacity. And that's, you know, something that I pray for continuously, because I want to be like that. And now, where was I? I hate that when I do this. But somewhere. All right. Thank you very much. You're paying attention. Wonderful. Anyway, this gal said, you know something? She says, I would be really glad to hear your fifth step. If you can't find someone who will listen to you or for you, I will be glad to do that for you. And right about that time, my husband and I went to a conference, the first conference we'd ever gone to, because the group that he belonged to wasn't very active in their community. They were only active in the group level. And Clancy was going to be speaking there. And we'd heard his tapes, and I was even impressed with the man. I thought, wow, you know, he was very opinionated, and I think that's what I liked about him. I could relate. And so anyway, we went to Helena, which is about a five-hour trip, and God does some of the neatest miracles. I was looking around at the tape table, just like we have all those tapes back there, and I seen Al-Anon 12-step study. Well, I'm telling you something. I did not know Al-Anon's worked steps. I honestly did not know that, and I was so excited, and so I picked it up, and I was going to buy this, and it was at the time Dick Martin was at the tape. I didn't know who he was, but he said, do you know this person that had done the 12 steps? And I said, no, I don't. And so he said, I think you'll like this one better. He put it down, and he handed me another one, and that was Binoy Shaw. And, you know, not knowing at the time, I took my tapes home, I listened to them, and something happened inside of me. And there was just, I cannot explain it. And if you've ever, you know, maybe when you reached the point of needing a sponsor, maybe something happened for you when you just knew it was that this person was the one that you needed to hear from. And so one thing led to another, and I asked her where she was going to be, maybe close to Montana in the next couple months. And she said, North Dakota. And North Dakota is just the next state over from Montana. How far can it be? But it was 12 hours. I said I would be there. My husband insisted I would be there because he'd already had this plan. See, that was my sponsor. He was going to get me a sponsor. So he was willing to go to any lengths, and he did. I asked Vinoy then to be my sponsor, and she said some words to me. She said, you know, she said that your life will never be the same. And I have to tell you, if that is the turning point. Even though I had been in Al-Anon for 5 years, I had never experienced the fullness of this program. And that's what I said. You know, people come in and people go out. And I think it's so important that we reach out and try to keep them here, because they're not going to know what's here unless they hear it from us. And if we just sit there and let them come in and out, we're missing it. We're missing the greatest joy that there can possibly be, and that's working with another one, being able to share our experience, strength, and hope. They say in Alcoholics Anonymous that sobriety, sometimes the only thing that works is sharing with another alcoholic. And I don't think we're so different in Al-Anon. I think that's what keeps me here. I think had I not been as active through the years as with working with people before I got my sponsor, I think I would have left. And it was really interesting, because what I did, people would call me up, and I would get out my Al-Anon books, and I'd have them all laid out, because I didn't know the answers. I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't have experience of working the steps. But you see, being the pre-Al-Anon that I was going to help these people. And so my intentions were good, and I think God honored that. And eventually, God put me in a position where He gave me something, that I did have something to give away. And I've met some of the most fabulous people along the way. This is the greatest journey. You know, there's just experiences that I've had since I've been here that has touched me in ways that I am so grateful. It makes me grateful that alcoholism beat me down the way that it did. Because you see, I'm a very proud, a very defiant, a very stubborn, self-willed person. And it took something as powerful as alcoholism to work in my life, to get me to a point of surrendering, to a point of humility, to a point of saying, I need help. That would have been the last thing. And I think that's why it's so hard. You know, Al-Anons, there should be 10 times as many Al-Anons as there are alcoholics. And why are there not? I think the reason not is because we are so self-sufficient that we just really have a difficult time admitting that we need help. And for me, it took every activity that took place in our marriage, you know, even though it brought me to a point of hating my husband, hating everyone around me, I felt like a failure as a mother, a failure as a wife, a failure as a human being. I felt lower than low can be, and that's when you were ready for me. And that's when you came into my life, and you helped me to rebuild. You helped me to become somebody different, somebody that you gave me the examples. You know, when you grow up in alcoholism, there's not a lot of examples. And my parents didn't have examples. As I said, alcoholism went way back. I tried to ask my mom some questions, and she won't. She's still in the denial or whatever, but she don't talk about it. Nope, there's no alcoholism in our family. And yet she'll make the comments about, well, you know, Grandma made Grandpa quit drinking. And he didn't have a drink after she said stop. Well, you know, that's her side of it, but come on. We all know that's not the end of the story. So it doesn't work that way. But, you know, it's been a journey, as I said. And we came into the program, and that's where our life really began. You know, the process of growing up, and that was real difficult. My husband and I still today, we have times, we have moments where you can walk into the house and you think, these people have never seen a program of recovery. But the beauty of it is that it doesn't stay that way. You know, we know what to do. We have tools. We have steps to take. We have sponsors. 1 year, I don't know, it was maybe 5 years ago, I thought everything was going wonderful. And my husband just kind of got wacky. It's like all of a sudden he comes into the room. And my husband's very easygoing. I'm usually the one that's very explosive and angry and hostile, you know, but he's usually very easygoing. But when he blows, he blows. And this one day he walked into the bedroom where I was putting some clothes away or something, and he put his hands on his hips. He says, that's it. I'm not living this way anymore. If you think that I have to put up with this, I am sober, and I do not have to live this way, and I'm not going to. And as soon as I get my dad paid off, I'm out of here. Well, I'm just going, where did this come from? And, you know, who knows what goes on in an alcoholic's mind. And so so I thought, well, okay, you know, we'll see you at dinner tonight, honey. Good night. But it didn't go away. In fact, it got worse. And it's like he had that look on his face. And you all know what I'm talking about. It's that stony, I remember seeing it so much in the alcoholism, where it's just anger and it's just rigid and there was just no talking to him. And so I just thought, well, you know, I don't know what to do with this, so I'm learning to do, you know, what I've been taught here. Just keep going to your meetings, keep it light and polite, you know, and, you know, just try to take right actions. And so I'm just going along, and then pretty quick, and my sponsor's never done this, I get a telephone call from my sponsor. And she says, my sponsor lives in California, right? And I live in Montana, so, you know, it's not like we see each other all the time. I call her once a week. And she calls me up, and she says, what is going on down there? And I said, well, what do you mean? She says, well, Jim, and that was her husband, and her husband was sponsoring my husband. She said, he received an inventory, and she says, I don't usually do this, but she says, listen to me, this is serious stuff. John is not just having a bad day. And I go, well, I don't know what's wrong. She says, then you better get an inventory to me quick. And, oh, I was mad. It's about this time of year. It's tax season. And I work for H&R Block during the tax season. So, I mean, I am just up to my neck because I also have my other part-time jobs. And I'm trying to keep all this going. And she says, you get that inventory to me quickly. And I never argue with my sponsor. I get one, but I really appreciate and value a sponsor. And so I emphasize that. She's 6 feet tall, and she's actually more overbearing than I am. But, I started kind of whimpering a little bit, saying, well, I don't know when I'm going to have the time for this. And she says, well, if you haven't got time for this, you're in big trouble, because this is your life you're talking about. So I said, thank you, and got off the phone, and I wasn't going to do it. I just thought, I'm not going to do this. I don't have time. I'll get to it when I get to it. But, God has his ways, and it was about, probably 4 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden my eyes popped open, and I could not sleep. And so you know what that meant? God was getting me, pushing me out of the bed so I could get that inventory done. And so I sat down, and I wrote that thing out, and I popped it in the mail that morning. And that weekend, my husband had before the letter even reached her, my husband had a men's retreat. They do that once a year. And he went to this retreat, and, he came home, and he sat down next to me, and he took my hand. He says, I'm really sorry. He says, I guess my rights took over again. And he said, I don't know what you're doing, but I'm staying here. I'm not going anywhere. And what had happened for him is that he had gotten to that retreat, and all those guys in his life that he has sponsored and that he has given direction to about commitment to marriage and taking right actions and doing for others and not worrying about what you get back and all that stuff he gave to his guys, they didn't really know what was going on. They would get up at the call-up meeting and they would talk about all the things that John had given to them about their marriage and that their marriage was so much better today because of it. That's what worked for him, And the point is I was willing to do what I had to do regardless of what I thought about it. He was doing what he does in Alcoholics Anonymous, and because of that, that was, like I said, I think about 5 years ago, and I still don't know what happened. I have learned and been taught that alcoholism is in the mind, and I don't know what he was going through, but I know one thing. I am an Al-Anon, and I'm sure that there are things that I do that I'm totally unaware of. But it doesn't matter. What really matters is that we have the tools. For our alcoholic marriage to work today, as I said, it's only a miracle because of this program, because of the tools that you have given us. And it has nothing to do with how we feel about each other. It's just a total attitude of commitment. And, that's what I have learned. And so because, as I was sharing, I met him when I was 12 years old, and today we've been married almost 29 years. It's truly a result of what you guys have given us. We have we have 3 children today. We had a sobriety baby after we came into the program, and that sobriety baby is Alcoholics Anonymous. Hold a chair. This boy is going to be with you, I can guarantee you. And he has never seen drinking in the home. He has only, been a part of our family, and that's it. And it's been a sober family at that. But this little boy he's charming. He'll just warm your heart, but he is frustrating. Ooh, I mean, he just... you've got children too, and I bet every one of you have got those that you can spot. And, I don't like to put labels on them and say this is where they're going to go. But, he's just like his sister, his older sister. And his older sister, she is 23, and she has 8 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, she came in when she was 14, and I'll tell you what, again, it's because of the AA family recovery, I believe. She didn't have to go to the bottoms, that some alcoholics have to go to, and I think that, it is true. I think it's Bill that said, hopefully we can raise these bottoms. And I think at times that's happening, that these kids are younger. There's a lot of kids in Alcoholics Anonymous today, and, that's really great. She started out in Alateen, and I just have to let you know that Alateen didn't keep her from drinking. Her mom and dad being in the program did not keep her from drinking. And so that is not a safeguard. However, it is a very good example for them, and they know where to go when they reach that point. And my daughter's seen happiness. My daughter's seen something that was an attraction to her. And I believe that's why she chose, when life got difficult for her, I think that's why she chose to come to you, because she loved you before she ever even was a part of you. And this middle boy that we have, I'm not sure, he doesn't seem to drink, but he sure goes with the girls who do. So my husband one day says, you got to talk to him. And, so I don't know, I just go to him and I say, son, I know he was in a broken-hearted place. His girl had gotten drunk and went off with a bunch of other boys, and he was just crushed. And so I said, you know, I don't know if you want to hear this or not, but I said, you know, I go to Al-Anon, and what Al-Anon's for is for people who've been affected by other people's drinking. And I said, you know, if you ever want to go, I just want you to know that I'd be more than happy to take you to a meeting or give you someone to talk to. And he goes, oh, Mom. So, you know, I don't know. That was the end of that conversation. Today he's still going with the girls who do. And, you know, I don't know where that's going to go, but I do know that God has him in his care. And I know that he's met all of you. He's, you know, that's the assurance I have in my heart, that you have touched his life. And because of that, he knows there's something different. And I'm real grateful for, you know, the recovery that we all have been given, the miracles that have happened. Now, I have to tell you, I was born in Ohio. It just didn't even occur to me. My mother had me. Well, I didn't want to start out when I was born anyway, you know. But my mom had me when she was 16 years old, and she had me in Toledo, Ohio, in the Maumee Valley Hospital. And, you know, when we flew into here, I thought, how interesting, because it's, you know, I'm 44 years old, and it's like I'm coming home. And you know what? I never knew. The neat thing about it was I never knew there was so many warm people in Ohio, where I come from. You know, it's one of those things. I think we hate our past so bad that there's nothing good about it. And God just keeps restoring our belief and faith in ourselves and in mankind, you know, as we continue on in this program. And so, you know, that was a real kind of a neat experience for me. And I just want to thank everyone, you know, for the warmth and hospitality. And Dennis and Charlene have been so, it's been, you know, it's just like been being at home. I just, from the moment I got off the plane, I want to tell you that I have felt so comfortable. And I'm really excited about the rest of the weekend. You know, you guys are crazy. I mean, you got 6 speakers in one day. Your butts are going to have to be in the can. Anyway, because you have so much sitting time left, I'm not going to keep you any further. I just want to thank you all for just for having me here and for giving me just such all of your love. I just really thank you and love you a lot. Thanks.